You are listening to The Loopcast for June 9th, 2007. I'm Jeff Horwich. And Sandon Totten, did you have fun at the Story Slam the other night?
Yeah, it was a blast, man. It was a great venue, great people, great stories.
If you're wondering what the heck Story Slam is, we tried out this new thing the other night at the Bryant Lake Bowl Theater in Minneapolis. Invited storytellers to come and bring stories of more or less 4 minutes with them, hop up on stage, drawn randomly from a hat, and entertain us with their take on the theme of escape. So that's how we set it up. And actually, for a first time out, even not for a first time out, I would say this is extremely impressive. Like a really, really amazing group of folks.
Yeah, no, they came prepared. I mean, some of these stories were just captivating.
So while we're still thinking about it, and while we've got some of this great material just sort of burning a hole in our hard drives, we thought we'd share a couple of those stories with you today. Two people who just showed up, put their names in the hat, and joined us for the first ever In the Loop Story Slam. Up next, we've got Dave Mondi, who's made his way to the stage. Dave's going to take us on the latest journey into the theme of escape. Dave, thanks for being here.
Escape from Alcatraz. Escape from L.A. The Great Escape, the Great Muppet Caper, the Lavender Hill Mob and the Italian Job, the Getaway with McQueen, Stalag 17, and Oceans 13, 12, 11, and then 11 again. All of these pale in comparison to what I pulled off. At least that was the case in my own mind as a drunk 17-year-old when I stole a 6-foot-long, 50-pound styrofoam sandwich. I should probably explain. If you grew up young and artsy in the suburbs, you probably went through this period of very vague rebellion. Where, like, Rage Against the Machine is the soundtrack, but the rage is only intermittent, and the machine is very ill-defined. So basically, like, we wanted a war or a protest or a war to protest, but we couldn't find those in West Bloomington. So we stuck it to the man by stealing road signs. Me and Che Guevara, very similar. Now, a temporary construction sign was worth relatively little to our cabal. A street sign or actual stop sign was worth more. The prize of the lot was owned by my friend Scott, which was clipped from the side of the Parks Department building, and it read, "Please place all dog feces in proper receptacles." And it's kind of odd that we didn't think it was weird that he hung that right above his bed. In fact, we thought it was, like, kind of awesome. And when I saw Jenny eyeing it with envy, she was, like, our de facto leader and the girl I secretly loved, I knew I had to do one better. And so 2 nights later, at 2 a.m., wandering through Cub Food, you know, for no-dos and Robitussin because we had coughs and stuff, I saw it hanging from the roof of the deli department, and I said, "I'm going to take it." And Jenny, her eyes got wide, and she goes, "No way." And I didn't really mean it when I first said it, but I sure as hell meant it now. And now is kind of like the Mission Impossible part. It's so cool. All right, so Nate and I are standing on stools drugged from the deli counter, and Scott is looking for the night manager, you know, and he's our lookout. And then Nate, he's sawing at the strings with his keys, and he gets his in free, but I can't get my in free. And then I hear Scott yelling, "He's coming, he's coming, he's coming." So I just yank real hard, just leaving a little bit of pickle swinging back and forth. And then we all run for the men's bathroom and hide in the handicap stall, all of us, three men, three women, and one giant sandwich. And we're waiting for police sirens, but apparently they didn't notice yet. So we start to make our escape plan. And these are kind of like drug-addled Larry Moe and Curly plans. Like someone actually suggested that we put a hat and coat on the sandwich and just kind of, you know, hey, another neighborhood a sandwich. And eventually, Scott scouts out our escape route, and then we all dodge down the aisles surrounding the sandwich like it's the president and we're the Secret Service when they've spotted a shooter. And we're almost free, but then we get to the final obstacle, the bakery counter. You see, it's the only department where someone's still up, and it comes up about shoulder high, and he's right back there, and there's no way past. But I look at Jenny, and I say, "Don't worry, I got it." and I put it on the ground and then kick it along with my feet while talking to the baker. Oh, hey, how's it going? Kick, shuffle, shuffle. You got any long johns? I'll come back later. Kick, shuffle, shuffle. And then we're gone, except for now the night manager sees us and he starts doing that, like, not really running, but that, like, fast walk, but you don't want to look dumb while you're running. And then he starts going, hey, 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 hey. And all my comrades in the fight just run away. But I pick it up like a football, charge towards the exit, and then I make it outside, and they've already got the hatchback running with the hatch open. I toss it in first because it's the treasure, after all. And then I jump in. I'm falling out. We pull away. Nate grabs me in. I mean, we're free. Okay? Now, the sad epilogue would be that I never got Jenny because, apart from those heroics, I was far less Indiana Jones than Ducky when it came to dealing with women. But I think the secret of a Hollywood ending is just where you choose to roll the credits. So I choose to end it with us driving away, and we're blasting Beck, and the music's pouring out of the window of our car like water from a lake-dredged car. And then Jenny looks back at me, and I look back at her, and I smile, and I pat the treasure, and I think I even grabbed my Stussy cap and pulled it down and doffed it, just like Indiana Jones' weathered leather signature Stetson.
Dave Mondy. Well, Dave escaped that story with his dignity intact. I wasn't sure how that was going to turn out. Guys in the smarts, you ever had to hightail it out?
We were just thinking about this gig, actually.
When have we not?
Escape your own tale of escape before the night's over. We're going to continue the Story Slam this evening with Linda Lee. Linda, thank you for joining us.
Do you ever lay in bed at night just wondering or worrying about, like, the meaning of life and deep stuff like that? That's what I was doing last night, laying wide awake in bed long after my husband had fallen asleep, and just thinking about the purpose of my life and reflecting on the fact that I'm not as good of a wife or mother or business person as I wish I was. I'm not really as good of a person as I wish I was. And somewhere, you know, I feel kind of tired and cranky all the time, too. I mean, God, and it's no wonder I couldn't get to sleep. But somewhere in the midst of this whirlwind of self-flagellation, I remembered a fortune that I had gotten in my fortune cookie earlier in the evening. And it was on my bedside table, so I reached for it, and I read it again. And it said, "He who believes is strong, and he who doubts is weak." And I was pondering that point, well, I didn't even hardly have a chance to, when I heard a crash upstairs. It sounded like a big piece of furniture falling over. And the really spooky part about this is that we don't even have an upstairs. So I started trying to wake up my husband. I was shaking him, but he wouldn't wake up, and I was shaking him and shaking him. And I realized I'm going to have to check this out myself. So I got out of bed, and I went out into the main part of the house, and everything looked pretty normal, right the way we had left it, until I got out into the living room. And then right in the middle of my living room, right in front of my eyes, this rickety old stairway appeared leading up to an attic door. It was a wooden door with a wooden frame, and it had a thin line of flames around the door, and there was smoke coming out underneath it, and the noises upstairs were just getting louder and louder, and there was, like, banging around and scratching and screaming and groaning. And, you know, it's really true what they say, that in a crisis like that, it just puts everything into perspective. Because all of a sudden, all that stuff I was worrying about in bed, it just didn't seem to matter at all. And I was so scared. My knees were shaking. I wasn't even sure that I could hold myself up. So I leaned against the wall for support. And at a crazy time like that, I had this weird thought. I thought about that fortune again. Now, what was it? He who believes is strong, and he who doubts is weak. And I wondered if all of this could somehow be tied in together, you know? And so I thought, what do I believe? I mean, what do I believe? And I know this sounds really corny, especially at a time like this, but really what came to me from my heart is I believe in love. I believe in love. So I raised up my hands to the door, and just then, whatever was back there just started throwing itself against the door. Bam! Bam! And it was so scary, but I raised my hands up and I said, I love you, and I bless you. Bam! Against the door. And then there was a huge explosion. And the door just blew off of its hinges. And there, engulfed in flames, was this thing. I don't even know what to call it. It was like a zombie or something. It was like a live, dead person with its skin was just like rotting right off of its skeleton. And it had an eyeball hanging out of its socket. And it just had like maggots squirming all over it. And it was looking right at me. And I said, I love you. And I bless you. And it just threw itself at me. And it nailed me right in the chest. And it hit me really hard. It just about knocked me down. And then it collapsed in my arms. And I looked down at it. And I saw something amazing. When I looked into its face, I saw a mutilated, distorted, grotesque version of myself. It was me. And I looked at it and I said, I love you, and I bless you. And it smiled. And when it did, this ugly-looking bug came crawling out of one of the sockets in its gums where its teeth should have been. And then in a flash, it all disappeared. And I was back in bed with my husband, and everything seemed fine. So I went to sleep.
Holy cow, Linda Lee. Just two stories from the, what would you say, Sandin, like 15, 20 different storytellers that we have on stage?
Just about.
So we're going to need to figure out if this is going to become a radio show at some point. Might or might not. But if we're able to bring it to you, that might happen in July. An hour-long version of the very first In the Loop Story Slam. And I think something we want to try again.
Yeah, definitely.
We had a few names left in that hat, so... if you
see
didn't,
y'all at the next one.
Exactly. If you didn't get in up to the stage this time, there will be more story slams to come. And again, a great turnout. Very encouraged about this idea. Sandin and I now are going to focus on our next show completely. We're heading down the street to the Dorothy Day Homeless Shelter here in St. Paul. If you're listening to this before Wednesday, June 13th, we're inviting people to join us. Come on down for sort of a chit-chat with some homeless folks, just informal ahead of time. Give us a sense of what some of the issues are here, how we can get into it. If you're interested in that, get in touch with us through our webpage, and we'll put you on the guest list.
Mm-hmm.
And with that emphatic closing remark from Sandin, we'll say thanks for listening to the Loopcast. The Smarts are the band that you're listening to at the moment.
Can I go to the webpage?
Sure. Ours or theirs?
Theirs.
Okay, go ahead.
You can find out more about the Smarts at thesmartsband.com.
And where, pray tell, Sandin, can you find out more about In the Loop?
Just go to minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop.
Oh, our little Sandin is growing up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sandin. And thanks for listening to The Loopcast. I'm Jeff Horwich.